Tuned in to the Jewish Activists Network. I'm Joe Orlow, your host, and we're broadcasting tonight from 12:30 to 1 a.m. and then beyond on the Internet. We'll tell you about that in a moment.
Thank you for being with us on the Jewish Activists Network. We are having a show today about the Temple Mount Har HaBayit. And if you'd like to call in about it, you can call 718-569-0921. We are going to be having a clip, actually, from our Shev originally. We took this clip of Rabbi Moshe Tendler, son of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, and he is going to speak about the Har HaBayit. He goes up regularly to the Har HaBayit. And after that clip, we would love to have your phone call, 718-569-0921. Again, 718-569-0921. So keep tuning in for the whole show. We're going to be talking about the Har HaBayit going up today, nowadays, to the Har HaBayit, not just to the Kotel HaRavi. And we are happy that you're with us tonight.
And again, you're tuned in to AM 620 WSNR. I'm Joe Orlow, your host, and you're listening to the Jewish Activist Network, broadcasting tonight from 12:30 to 1 a.m. Now, we're on AM 620 for the next half hour. At 1 a.m., we go off the air on AM 620, but we stay on the air on the Internet. And if you want to hear us, you can hear us streaming live on the Internet. Go to the Jewish Activist Network website, jewishactivistnetwork.com, and click on the Streaming Worldwide link there, and you'll be able to hear us through the Internet as we continue the show at 1 a.m. to 1:30 tonight. And we'll be discussing the defeat of the gay marriage bill in the New York Legislative Senate. And our guest will be Rabbi David Idenson, speaking about that and other issues about the First Amendment and how it impacts the Jewish community. And now to the clip of Rabbi Moshe Tendler, taken from Arut Sheva.
I think what's lacking over here is some clarity that this is not a halachic issue. I think must be emphasized. Halacha that's being spouted is sometimes embarrassing. The idea that maybe the Kotel is really the Kotel of the Azorah, Kotel of the Beis Hamikdash itself, which when you were in Europe and the Kotel was Milsa, the Meshichasa, was a dream. Then there was a big suffix in everyone's mind. What is it? Who is it? Where is it? Baruch Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Rachmav, gave us Eretz Yisrael. We've been there. We are there. We've done even just minimum investigation. We know clearly that the Kotel is the Kotel of the Har HaBayit. It has nothing to do with the Azorah. No kind of measurements could possibly be associated with the Azorah, with the Beis HaMikdash proper. So that takes away the fact that they cite Gedolim, who feared going close to the Kotel because it may be the Mokom HaKadosh already. That, Baruch Hashem, has been clarified. And only those who are insisting on a political position, not go up to the Har HaBayit for whatever reason they have, political to support the Rabbanus HaRoshes, a kind of strange reason, like Rav Aviner sows in because that will be called to go up to Loyalu Bechoma, part of the old warning that Chazal gave in the Gemara, not to force our way up. Unfortunately, as I can tell you from being up there so many times, we don't force our way up on Har HaBayit. It's embarrassing that we have to come up there as beggars, careful not to antagonize anyone of the Shu'olim Hilkubo, of the people who control the Har HaBayit now. They're careful to see that we don't mumble Chalil Lachas, that we offer a tefillah on Har HaBayit, etc., etc. So that's all nonsense. The facts have to be accepted. Second, there's a kind of beetle, a kind of degradation of the work that was done by the Gaon, previous Rav HaRoshi, Rav Shlomo Golan, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Massive, massive work, accurate work, helicopter surveys, careful measurement by engineers. We know exactly where the Har HaBayit is in the most dramatic association with the distances from the Evan Shasiya, from the rock, which is accepted by all as a base Kodesh Kedoshim. We know that there is a big area that has nothing to do with the Azorah, that's part of just a harabayas where it's permissible for anyone, even a tummy mess. You can bring a funeral up there. You can bring a dead body up there. It's perfectly mutter to there. That's not part of any kedusha that would interfere with someone. As long as he's followed the halacha, because of bodily emissions, his requirement to go to mikveh the day before and follow the halachos of the kedushas habayis of the mora b'migdosh, not to wear leather shoes and not to come in with the packs around the belly that people wear containing their wallets and so on. Not to be careful what you talk on harabayis, how you behave on harabayis, to dress properly in going up harabayis. Now, I believe that to going up to harabayis, you have to dress like you're going to a shul. You should wear a jacket, you should wear a hat. Those who are accustomed to wear a tie should wear a tie. This is the halacha that everybody knows. Now, this is not an issue that should have made the papers. It's not an issue that should be on a whichever. It should be part of the general knowledge of every Jew. The harabayis has been carefully measured. We know exactly where it is. We know exactly, where the Azorah is, where the end of the Beis HaMikdash is. A big area is part of it. It's landfill that maybe Huldus decided to expand the area. But whatever reason it is, there are no doubts involved here. Anyone who raises a doubt does so for ulterior motives. And that's the embarrassing part of this little controversy. Why it is a controversy, I say it's hard to understand. Now, the Rabbanus of Rosh is so fit to put up a sign asking the Jews not to go up on Harabayas. Why they did so, who knows. Why Moshe Dayan gave away the Harabayas, it's hard to understand what kind of self-degradation was involved in doing that, degradation of the Jewish people. But nevertheless, there are no doubts here. If the Rabbanus HaRoshes were doing their job, and I now level a charge of Samchut B'li Afrayut, they have authority and no responsibility. Hundreds of tourists go up, led by secular guides, going to where it's forbidden to go, where there's a Chiv Koris to go. Had the Rabbanus HaRoshes done its role as the Rabbanut of Eretz Yisrael, they would have put up a sign that says, "We have a tour that is conducted in accord with Jewish law. We ask all Jewish visitors to please follow our guide." And that way, we would save a whole bunch of Jews from Yisuri Doraisa. More importantly, even a Reformed Jew who is distant from Jewish observance, when they come to Eretz Yisrael, some kind of kedusha rests on their shoulders. And if they would hear that you can walk with the secular guides another 100 feet in, and if you follow the Rabbanut HaRoshes guide, he will lead you in a way that's proper, everyone would go with them. Instead, they put up a sign which nobody listens to, nobody reads there, and it has no effect. And now that some of the Gedolei Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael saw fit to try to support that, the issue should be raised with them. Why are they doing that? They're worried about the few yeshiva boys that they go up on Harabayas. Why aren't they worried about Klal Yisrael? Don't they understand that they're going to go, they're not impressed with what our Gedolim say? And when the Gedolim are talking, like I'm saying now, not la halacha, but they are speaking for reasons other than halacha. Political, possibly inaccurate information. Hundreds of Rabbonim in Yesha who signed a kol kore asking the Jews to go up on Harabayas, lest the Harabayas indeed become foreign territory for us and become de facto entirely Muslim. These Rabbanim who are on the scene, they are living the life of Eretz Yisrael. They are putting their lives on the line for where they're living. They are going to the army defending Am Yisrael. And these are Rabbanim who also Gedolei Torah, Talmidei Chachamim, and they saw fit to affix their signature. I believe that it was 100 or 110 Rabbanim who affixed their signature to a fervent request that Jewish visitors should please go up on Harabayas. It's difficult to understand why now some Rabbanim decided, truly Gedolei Yisrael, but I believe with faulty information provided to them, so fit now to raise the issue again. I think the interview with me is of no consequence. I think there should be an interview with the Hagoah and the Rabbi Yosef Shlita, with those who with Reb Chaim Kanievsky Shlita, to ask them, what are they doing? Do they not understand that whoever is feeding them information has some ulterior motives? Well, they are not on the scene. They don't go up to Har HaBayis to see what's happening there. I can tell you from my own experience, when I began going on Har HaBayis, there were Shu'olim Hilkubo, there were Arab boys playing soccer, the guards were eating garinim, and as more and more Jews began going up, you saw that the formality came into it. They were embarrassed to sit there and eat garinim, and the soccer playing I haven't seen, and the garbage on the floor has been picked up. We made that contribution already for Kedushas Har HaBayis. I think that pretty well summarizes what I would like to contribute. I hope that your listeners or your readers will understand this is not an issue of halacha. As the introductory remarks you made said, halacha, I know where to ask halacha. Baruch Hashem, my great father-in-law Zatzal found nothing questionable. Accepted that surely from the halacha you can see that there are areas in Har HaBayis where it's permitted for Tomei Mess, even though we don't have the Por Aduma Eter, and we can't cleanse ourselves from the Tumas Mess. It's perfectly permissible for us to walk there. The issue, again, I repeat, is not halacha, and therefore the motivation for those who are coming out against going to Har HaBayis, it has to be questioned, and more importantly, facts have to be presented to them, as I'm doing now, and ask them to back off, to say, Chotosi, we did wrong. It's Chodesh Elul, they to know they made a mistake.
And the appeal.
That was a clip of Rav Moshe Tendler. You heard the clip. I'm going to be speaking just for a few minutes, go through a few of the Makaras. And then, of course, we will take immediately phone calls. Our phone number is 718-569-0921, 718-569-0921. Let me just go through a few of them, of course, so and you can also take a look at our website, jewishactivistnetwork.com. And on the website, we have actually a clip, a YouTube clip of Rav Tendler going actually on the Har HaBayis. You could watch the clip. It's about 17 minutes long. We have, you can also click and get Rav Tendler interviewed on Arutz 7. There you have the full interview. It's a longer interview. We have a video of Rav Elbaum. He's been going up to the Har HaBayis for the last 42 years, and he's been trying to, he wrote a few svarim, on the topic of actually bringing Korbanos and building Beis HaMikdash in our time. He's a Belzer Chassid, and as you can see on the clip, he and a bunch of other Haredim have gone up to the Har HaBayis, and they go up on a constant basis. There's also the Temple Institute website, www.templeinstitute.org. That's not related to Rabbi Elbaum, but it does speak about it, and it has some of these, some information. Let me just read quickly something which is a mistake that people make, which people think that somebody who's a tamei to a dead body, cannot go up to the Har HaBayis. That's not correct, and I'm going to be reading Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Perek 7, Zion, Halacha, Tesvav, and Tezayin, depending on which edition you have. It says that Har HaBayis mekudesh mimena. Har HaBayis is more kodesh than Yerushalayim. She'em zavin v'zavos, nidos v'yoledos, nichnas n'osham. A zavin v'zavos, those are people who have a sickness, a menstrual flow, and a zavin and a zavos, their purification is by a mikvah on the seventh day. They have to wait for seven clean days, and on the seventh day they go to the mikvah, and once they go to the mikvah, they're tful yom. A tful yom means you tovel that day, but the sun didn't yet set. After the sun set, it's considered to be a har of shemesh, that now the sun set on them. And then there's a third level in Mechusa Kippurim, which is for a certain tumas, you also have to bring a carbon. So there are three levels. But once they go to the mikvah, they are considered to be a tful yom, and they're pure, and that's certainly when the sun sets. Zavin and Zavis, Nidus and Yoledus, Nichnas and Lashon. They're not allowed to go there. umotu lachmas hamesa atzmo, but you're allowed to bring even the dead person himself to harabayis, ein sochor metomek mes shunichlus l'sham. So certainly a tomek mes. So again, you have certain types of tumas that come out of the body. Those are the usual categories that that they're called. Tumas hayotze mei guf. Those are flows which come out of the body that make a person unclean. All those tumas are cleaned by a mikvah. The only tum which is not is a mace, a tummy mace, which you need to put a duma. Tummy mace and even a mace itself is allowed to go onto the harabayit. The Rambam says the same thing in Hilchos Bias HaMikdash, Perek Gimel Halacha Daled. And I'll just quickly read it. Tummy mace, afilo hamace, asmai mutu lachmus laharabayit, shenemar, v'yikach morshis asmus Yosef imo b'machane halaviyah, with him in the machane halaviyah. Machane halaviyah was the harabayit. Within the harabayit, the azor itself, he is considered to be the machane, that's the machane shechina. That there you're not allowed to go in. And by the way, the Ezra's Nashim is still part of machane levi. It's really part of the harabayis, but midr rabbanon it's considered to be that we should be careful and act as if it was a machane shechina. I am now going to read very quickly a paragraph from Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva. Now, his tshuva was not focused on going to Harabayit. He was just answering a question from somebody, which I'm going to read it very quickly. This is part of his tshuva, Arachayim, the second Arachayim, volume 113, Kuf Yud Gimel. Now, concerning that which you answered regarding the question raised in the book Omer HaShikha, regarding the fact that in both the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch, there is no mention of a law stating that in our time it is forbidden to spit on the Temple Mount. You offer as a possible answer that in any event, such a case is only hypothetical because such a possibility could never occur, since it is forbidden for Tamei Mesim, those rendered impure by exposure to death, to enter into the area of the Temple Mount. And after all, we are all in that category today. But observe, there is no place on the Temple Mount. There is a place on the Temple Mount where entry for Tamei Mesim is permissible, even according to the stricter rabbinical ordinance that is up to the Chel, which lay within the Soreg. So just let me just take a break over here. Around the temple, around the Azara itself, there were two levels. There was a Chel and a Soreg. And the Chel was a rabbinical, like a boundary, it's a few amas, a few cubits outside of the actual Azara to warn people, don't go past here. And those few cubits, Midor Rabbanan, you weren't allowed to go in just like you weren't allowed to go into the Azara. So let's continue with Ramasha. Now, as far as that which the Rambam cites, Hilchos Beis Bechira, chapter 5, halacha 3, that the Sorig encompassed all around, it is possible that the Chel was also encompassed all around. The Tosas Yom Tov explains it this way in the name of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. According to this, it is permissible for the Tamei Mesim to enter into the mount until the Sorig, which was a number of cubits wide. I have not been able to determine how many, from all sides, even from the west. And according to the opinion of the Rosh, who maintains that the Sarg was only on the eastern side from north to south, perhaps the Chel was also only to be found there. And if that is the case, perhaps on the other sides, the 10 cubits of the Chel were past the woman's court, and thus it would even be permitted for the Tamei Mesim to enter from the west. Now, regarding other forms of impurity that may affect an individual, after all, it is possible to immerse in a mikvah and thus be purified of these types of impurity. Therefore, the issue of other forms of impurity, other than that of death, is not an issue that could prevent one from entering those areas of the Temple Mount, which are permissible for Tamei Mesim to enter. If one is concerned about Ziva, then the individual can count 7 clean days and immerse in a spring or other natural source, and afterwards wait the following day. And that will be sufficient even to allow a Zav, somebody with an unnatural flow, to enter the Temple Mount. And even though such an individual is still in the category of Mechusa Kapara, I told you before that was a halacha category referring to one who was pure, but it does not actually get a carbon. The Rambam cites in Hilchos Beis Bechira, Paragimel Halacha Chamishi, such an individual may still enter even into the woman's court, and they certainly enter into other areas of the Temple Mount. So thus we find the law which forbids spinning on the Temple Mount in the areas in which entry is permitted, the Tamei Mesim, is indeed applicable, and thus the question raised by the Omer Shichel was a valid one. Okay, so I'm going to stop reading there, and I'm going to be taking phone calls.
Okay, we have
if anybody has questions, if it's interesting.
We have Rabbi Idenson with us. Welcome again to the Jewish Activist Network, Rabbi Idenson.
Shalom, shalom. Hope you had a good time in Eretz Israel. I hope we're going to meet you there.
Amen. It's a pleasure to hear from you.
Yeah. I just want to say that I was very shocked by Rabbi Tedler's presentation. It's very possible for two prominent rabbis to disagree with each other, but the fact is that going on the Harabayas, going back to the time of Moshe Leib Diskin, the 19th century, and certainly before then, no one did it.
That's not such a strong objection because...
Please, let me just finish my point.
I just want to make my point
if you look into the internet, there's a whole bunch of articles about this. You'll see that 30 years ago, all the rabbis from all different types of orthodoxy, they said no one should go to Harabayas. Now, the main point I want to make is, again, I feel that the terminology, what they said is an embarrassment. They did it for political reasons. They were ulterior motives. They didn't have the facts. This is a brutal insult to the Gadol HaDor. Such a person who talks like that, he should be put in jail.
Who's the Gadol HaDor?
Rabbi Yashiv is. And Rabbi Yashiv and his Chaim Kineski are the Gadol HaDor today, including Rav Wozner. These are the senior Gadolim of the world. Now, Rabbi Tevin may feel he's the Gadol HaDor, but I want to tell you something else. I don't know how many people would agree with him about that, but one thing, even if he considers himself an equal of Yashiv, to go in public or to make a video and call Rabbi Yashiv and all the Rabbanim, or the vast majority disagree with him, and such insults, they don't have the facts, they're doing it for political reasons, this is absolutely disgraceful. Now, I just want to get to the main point.
No, I have to correct you. He didn't say that they specifically, Rabbi Yashiv, what he said was, is that, the people who are giving it to them, he doesn't know about them personally. And this is true, it's an unfortunate thing, that a lot of the Gedolim they're not on the ground themselves, and they rely on information fed to them. And we've already seen, oftentimes, hachros and hachrosos with signatures on them, and we found out later on that they weren't told the full story, and somebody came to them and they convinced them of things. And they signed it. It's unfortunate, but it happens. And that's the charge he's leveling. And he's saying that he thinks that it's of no consequence that he's being interviewed. These questions have to be asked of them directly. And somebody who's not part of the inner circle there, who serves as a buffer.
But it certainly didn't sound like that to me from the, that may be what he's saying, but from the plain meaning of the audio that we heard, it didn't sound that way.
Let me just finish my point.
No, he's talking about the Rav Roshes, all those are of them, and then they supported that position. So he has
I just want to mention his father-in-law.
In either case, at the end of the day, if Rav Tendler believes that to be the case, right, does he not have an obligation to go and say so? In other words, if somebody's on a Sanhedrin, for example, there's no Sanhedrin here. But if you know halacha to be A, and other people are saying different, it's forbidden for you to go along with them because somebody else says it, even if they're greater. Didn't in the Sanhedrin they started from the lowest person, the person who wasn't the person with the least seniority, purposely said that they shouldn't be influenced.
Let me know. You don't find anything wrong, and Rabbi Tendler is referring to the senior rabbonim in the world, who are respected by everyone as these senior rabbis in the world, saying that what they're saying is an embarrassment, and they do it for political reasons and for ulterior motives. If you don't think that's an embarrassment, then we have nothing to discuss because...
Listen to me. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. All I'm saying is that...
You are saying
correct,
it's right.
That
you're saying it's an obligation to insult the
Pedeschi
and
Rabbanis. I really don't like the argument where the facts are not discussed. In other words, the facts of in the halacha, what's discussed, and the only problem is that somebody doesn't like that somebody says something that offends somebody.
Excuse me, you're putting words in my mouth. If you talk all the time, then I can't get my point across.
Hold on.
You stop at the Ramesh's Tshuva, You read most of Moshe's Tshuva, you didn't read the end of it. The end of it, Moshe says clearly that the Brisker Rav didn't even go to the place of Arovi.
Listen to me.
You're going
to
cut me off again and argue.
I'm going to read the rest of the Tshuva right now. I have it in front of me.
What?
I think I'm going to read the rest of the Tshuva since you mentioned it, because nobody should think that I didn't read it because I tried to hide something. Okay. Now, so I'm just hold up. I'm going to read it right now. So Rav Moshe, now perhaps it was someone unclear, I'm quoting Rav Moshe, someone unclear as to which wall this is, the Kosel of Meravi. Was there a clear tradition that it is the western wall of the Temple Mount, or was it perhaps the wall of Azara behind the location of the Holy of Holies? And if that was so, indeed, entry for Tamei Mesim into that area would be forbidden, if actually the wall of the Kosel was the wall of the actual Kodesh Kedoshim. As you have postulated, alternatively, it is possible that this is the wall of one of the cells, an area that would be forbidden even according to the opinion of the Rosh. I seem to recall that in the book Shalat David by the Gaon Rav David of Karlin, the author expressed doubt as to which wall this is. Perhaps this is the reason why it is related that the Gaon of Risks itself did not visit the Kotel Hamaravi out of concern for impurity. But, Rav Moshe says, but I find this strange. In that place of our prayer, there is certainly a well-established tradition that is permitted to go there, dating from the time of our early sages. And how is it possible to differ with them? With esteem, Moshe Feinstein. So Rav Moshe, he rejects that. He rejects the idea that the Kosel Meravi is the wall of the Kodesh Kedoshim. He mentions it as, you know, maybe that's the reason why some people do that. But he cannot imagine that the wall that everybody's been praying for generations, that somebody could come and put it down on that wall. Now, I want to just mention that Rav David Temler addressed that. He addressed the fact that in Europe you had a lot of Gaonim, and also even 30 years ago when it was forbidden to go there. The Waqf did not allow anybody to go past the Kotel. People were uncertain, sure, they didn't know. It was something vague, something far away. Nowadays, it's clear. We're there. We know exactly. We have the measurements. We know where the Evan Shasi is. There's no doubts now.
How do we know? Let me ask. How come you say we're so sure we know where the Evan Shasi is? How do we know that?
Rabbi Goren
didn't know where the Evan Shasi was. There are many people that saw. There are many people that went in.
But how come Rabbi Goren didn't know where the Evan Shasi was?
Who?
Rabbi Goren. Did he know where the Evan Shasi was?
Yes.
How do you know?
Absolutely.
It says on the internet an article from Rabbi Sherman about him that he wasn't sure where it was. He said maybe
there
was something
he had a study on it. He even quoted the Rabbi Goren.
But when you say a study, what is that study based on is what I'm asking. Was that study based on Arabs who have a tradition, or was it based on archaeology?
You can go read the study.
Okay.
If you want a specific study and details of it,
yeah,
you certainly you should, and it's your obligation to go and study it.
Just for our listeners to know,
I
just want to mention to our listeners that the Evan HaShasiya is a central point, which from there you can find the rest of the dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore the discussion of where it is central to where a person can go and where they cannot go.
So that's really, I mean, the only thing, I just don't, it does bother me, I have to admit, when the arguments end up falling back on saying that how could somebody say something, and it's disrespectful to say that the other people didn't have a good halachic basis for what they're saying.
That's not what he said. You're twisting things, and you're not saying straight things. Rabbi Temler said, he did not say what you're saying about facts. He said, A, that the Moshe finds his tshuva, it's clear that you're allowed to go and hire bias. That's not true.
He doesn't say that in his tshuva. That he was not relying on that. Rav Moshe Feinstein was his father-in-law. He said that his father-in-law knew, if you listen carefully, especially if you listen to the whole clip, that Moshe's father-in-law knew what he was doing. He mentioned, he told his father-in-law what he was doing, and his father-in-law would have told him not to go. His father-in-law had no problem telling him.
Don't give me this baloney. The idea is that he quotes Rav Moshe's tshuva to corroborate what his feeling is. And again, you haven't answered what I said.
We're just about out of time.
The brutal insults that he said to beat Robert Gordon are much greater than him.
We're just about out of time. We're going to be continuing this discussion online. So please go to JewishActivistNetwork.com. That's JewishActivistNetwork.com. One more time, JewishActivistNetwork.com. And you can hear us online and with the rest of this discussion.